sahanavavatu sahanau bhunaktu sahaviryam karavavahai tejasvinavadhitamastu ma vidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Okay, page 85. Lord Sankarsana continued, All living entities, moving and non-moving, are my expansions and are separate from me. I am the supersoul of all living beings who exist because I manifest them. I am the form of the transcendental, because Krishna is unlimited, he's always there. He's always there. So the point is that it's not that he creates the living entities. They're always there. The creation means simply you are causing transformations within the material energy. And because those were not manifest before, there's a beginning, there's a middle, and an end. Right? So this process of transforming the material energy has a beginning, middle, and end. So therefore we say creation, maintenance, and destruction. Right? But the energy itself is always there. These forms are eternal. Everything about it's all eternal. So the living entities aren't created. They're manifest. Right? The material energy isn't created. It's manifest. Does that make sense? Like you have a lump of clay, then you manifest a pot from it. You know what I'm saying? But it's not that you created the earth and create. You know, we like to use these things, but... Right, but the concept of a pot's already there. Otherwise, how can you make it? If it's not already there, you can't do it.
Even Einstein came with that conclusion.
Oh, okay.
Without nice. So much, I suppose he read the Vedas, no? Because
could be. It was popular then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nowadays, I don't think so, but then a little bit more. Yeah. I am the supersoul of all living beings who exist because I manifest them. I am the form of the transcendental vibrations like Omkara and Hare Krishna, Hare Rama, and I am the supreme absolute truth. These two forms of mine, namely the transcendental sound and the eternal blissful spiritual form of the deity, are my eternal forms. They are not material. Right? So that means the form is spiritual, the Lord's form. We just take a responsibility to... worship the deity, therefore we say he's installed. Right? So therefore, in the form of his name, in the form of the deity, he's eternally present. Like that. So they're non-different from him.
Right? Regarding installation of the deities, in some temples they don't install the deities.
And you'll also find that a lot of times boys and girls are riding around on bikes together and they get into bed naked together also and they're not married. Shall we further the conversation? Okay. You know, people do whatever they like. Then there's reality. If you're not going to install deities, why would you have them? You know, it's like keeping a woman in the closet, and whenever you feel like it, you take her out to dinner and all that, and then when she gets a little grumpy, stick her back in the closet. Yes, it would
happen in some households.
Yeah, whatever it is. But the point is that, you know, there's reality. People do whatever they like.
Yes.
Then there's reality. You know. So the point is deities aren't a game. You know, all this whole thing, oh, we're devotees, we don't care for the rules. But the point is these rules we didn't learn until we were devotees. They're given to us by Prabhupada. And so then if we're going to play with them, how sincere are we about following what Prabhupada said? Deities means installed. if they're in the temple. That means second initiated devotees worship them. There's rules. You don't want to follow all those rules. You only want first initiates to worship. That's called pictures. And in the 70s, there were plenty of temples that had pictures. They had Panchatattva picture, and the first initiates do the worship, but they still follow the rules. They take the bath, clean clothes, do the arti, achmans, the whole thing. But if they want to have deities and then have first initiates or non-initiates worship, what's the point? They'll say, oh, but people are inspired. No one's inspired. If Krishna's not happy, no one's happy. If you don't follow Krishna's rules, Krishna's not happy. No one's happy. I have yet to see the yatra that has deities like that, that has a fabulous growing community. Why do they have deities and no one to worship them? Because no one's joining, no one's inspired. So it's not working. Does that make sense? That's the whole point. So, but because the idea is thought that if we only have pictures, it's not prestigious. I, as a temple president, I only have a temple with pictures. Where's my big temple? Where's my deities? Where's my this, that? But the real point is make devotees, preach to devotees, cultivate the devotees. Then devotees will make the temple. But if you think the temple will make the devotees, one is highly mistaken.
What is your opinion about...
Don't start on this opinion. This is not what this is about. We're hearing what Prabhupada, what Vishwanath, what Baladev, what Jiva Goswami. It's not about opinion. We don't care about opinions.
I should say, why there are two standards, one for home, one for temple.
Is this a deity worship class?
No, sorry.
Is this the topic?
Sorry.
Do you understand?
I might ask you later.
Yes. So, but the point is home worship is, that's one thing. Temple worship is another. Right? So when temple worship then is not even as good as home worship, then what's the point? Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur elaborate. You have understood about bhakti. Your verses of praise are the proof. I will now teach about jnana, in order that you become indifferent to questioning. Please listen. You should consider this. There are two types of objects, permanent and temporary. There are three eternal objects, Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan, with his associates. Right? So Bhagavan means with associates. If you have just God, that's Paramatma. Yes.
In order that you become indifferent to questioning,
just your regular kid, just to know, just there's a doubt, and so, you know, I don't like this, or, you know, these kind of, in other words, things that are just based upon our conditioning. It's actually to, because the thing is, why is it the jigyasu, I mean, the jnani is considered a neophyte. You know, it's obvious about the jivyasu and artarthi. But even the jnani is considered neophyte because it's about knowing about God rather than understanding how to serve God. Right? So in other words, if, let's say, all I do is learn facts and figures about a person. Right? That's all I learn. I never interact with them any more than that. Do we have a solid relationship? No. So bhakti means the process of applying that devotion. Rather than who is God, how is it big, you know, at what time does he go out and play his flute, and how many gopis come, and then, you know, who does what, who said what. But it's all about, it's all facts, it's all sambandhigyan. You know what I'm saying? And it's not even sambandhigyan to practically apply it. It's just, it's interesting. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point, because the thing is we can discuss that, then what are you going to do with it? So that's the thing, is that, yes, it comes up, it's part of the process, but just learning facts about the Lord is not the main drive of devotional service. It's how to express one's surrender to the Lord, what the engagement of one's senses in the Lord's service. Therefore, if we don't know how to do that, that's why we learn. But we're learning how to please the Lord rather than just questioning just to know.
And this would be that kind of value is there in the question is on the level of Brahman?
Not necessarily. Brahman, Paramatma, they think it's about Bhagavan. They're technically talking about Bhagavan, but it's just facts and figures. So, you know, like that. Not that we're not, devotees are all dealing with Bhagavan. If one is surrender, one is dealing with Bhagavan. But the tendency is that much of the time we're dealing outside of that. Just because we don't know, why go to Mangalarti? You know, because you should, or it's good, or it's nice, or is pious, or you get purified, or how many say just, I like going to Mangalarti, I like seeing Krishna first thing in the morning, right? You know, rather than getting up and getting my cup of coffee and getting out the newspaper, you know? So I'd rather see the deities. How many answers do you get like that? So that's Bhagavan. Okay. Yeah. There are two types of unreal objects, experienced and unexperienced. Srila Prabhupada refers to these as karma and dikarma, respectively. The experienced unreal object consists of dreams and magic. The unexperienced unreal object consists of imaginary objects like a flower in the sky or a rabbit with horns. You give really good examples, right? No, it's a rabbit with horns. Not, who thinks of these things, right? Yeah. So. Sorry?
Rabbit with horns.
No, it's just it's absurd enough. It's probably a Vedic point, you know, that really makes the point. The first canto of Bhagavatam says that the permanent object is the best. Vedyam vastava atra vastu. Right? So there's permanent and temporary. So permanent then is Brahman, Paramatman, Bhagavan. So anything connected with that, that's real. Then of the temporary, then there's the things that we, you know, that we have our that we've experienced as dreams and that, and then there's the stuff that flies around in our head that we think will be fabulous if it happens. Right? Does that make sense? So he's pointing out this is unreal. We'll say, no, this is real. And then when we talk about the real, they'll say, no, that's unreal. That's just theory. But the ideas in my head flying around, that's substance. The Shastra says it's the opposite. So what does that mean? Only under ignorance than you think. The reverse. So why would we do that? Because of passion. Because from the Shastra, what will I get? From my things in my head, I'll get so much profit, so much benefit. In order to speak about the permanent object, first the impermanent objects are described. I am all beings. I am the universes consisting of the jivas and their enjoyed objects. Since I am non-different from my Maya Shakti and my Jiva Shakti, the jivas are called temporary objects in this case because of their covering of ignorance. But not the jiva himself, but the form that he takes and the activities he performs, that's considered temporary. Because it's based on the modes of nature, and so it will go for some time, it'll be changing, and then he'll leave the body. You know, it'll be a major change into some other body, and then it will keep transforming. So that's why, in this perspective, then Krishna is defining the jivas as temporary. Right? Material nature is temporary, the jivas is temporary. And I manifest all these beings, Bhuta Bhavanaha. I am the first Purusha. And I bestow these jivas with various bhavas, such as Dasya or Sakya, Bhuta Bhavanaha. I am the Vedas, Shabda Brahma, which are my breathing. Right? So that's the point. If we oppose the Vedas, oh, this Vedic stuff doesn't work, we're technically opposing Krishna. No devotee means to do that. The Krishna of the 11th canto says, you're doing it, even if you're a devotee. You can't be opposed to the Vedic version. You may say, okay, well, how does this actually apply in my situation? You can't just say, oh, it doesn't apply and throw it out. That's like saying Krishna doesn't apply in my life. Right? I am the impersonal Brahman realized with Jnanis. These two are my forms. There may be a fear that the Vedas are not eternal since they are a form of sound related to ether, which is material. There may be a fear that Parabrahma is unreal since it is not definable by words. To remove those doubts, it is said, these two are eternally existing.
Right? So he just says, they're eternally existing, that's why then you don't have to worry about it.
So he's the Shastra, he's Brahman, he's Paramatma. Right? Because everything's based on Shastra. Right? Shastra is coming from Krishna, but Krishna always acts according to Shastra. Right? He gives the rules and then he follows them. Why does he follow? Because he's, in other words, he gives the rules he wants to follow. So if we don't like the Vedic rules, then how are we going to like being with Krishna? Because when we get to the spiritual world, we'll find out Krishna does all the stuff that the Shastra talks about. You know what I'm saying? He's respectful to his mother and father. Right? He does his duties as a Vaishya. He takes the cows out. He does these things. Lord Sankarsana continued, in this world of matter, which the conditioned soul accepts as consisting of enjoyable resources, the conditioned soul expands, thinking that he is the enjoyer of the material world. Similarly, the material world expands in the living entity as a source of enjoyment. In this way, they both expand, but because they are my energies, they are both pervaded by me as the Supreme Lord. I am the cause of these effects, and one should know that both of them rest in me. Right? So he is the original cause. Now, they are a cause of so many transformations. Right? The living entity rests in the material energy because his body is made of material energy, he's, with his senses and that, he's interacting with material energy, and the material energy rests in the living entity because the mind is always thinking of the material energy. Does that make sense? So you can't separate the two. Right? The conditioned nature of the living entity and the material world. They're two aspects of the same thing. You understand? The material nature itself and then the bodies and situations created from that material nature. Right? Right? So that means the living entity always thinks about that, so that means material energy is in them. But they're always functioning under the modes in the situations created by the material nature, so they're always within the material energy. You see the two? Yeah. Yeah. When a person is in deep sleep, he dreams and sees in himself many other objects, such as great mountains and rivers, or perhaps even the entire universe, although they are far away. Sometimes when one awakens from a dream, he sees that he is in human form, lying in his bed in one place. Then he sees himself in terms of various conditions as belonging to a particular nationality, family, and so on. All the conditions of deep sleep, dreaming, and wakefulness are but energies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One should always remember the original creator of these conditions, the Supreme Lord, who is unaffected by them. Okay, so he's creating all them, but because of our interest, then we get involved in all these things. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, rejecting impermanent objects and unreal objects, one should worship my form as Antaryami. This is explained in two verses, 53 and 54. And so when we see him as the Supreme, that he's in everything, then we worship him in that position. Then the material energy is connected to the Lord. Lord Shankarshan continues. Right. So many times when Krishna's explaining before, you know, in these different times he appears and explains, you'll see that the flavors are different, right? When he comes as the Lord of Sacrifice, to, you know, Indra or to Prajapati, right? Then he deals in one way. You know how he's saying the same thing, but it's more on he is the super soul. He's the Lord of the demigods. He's the Lord of sacrifice. He's like this. But here we're dealing with Sankarshan, right? So Sankarshan is Sambandhijan, right? The knowledge of that. So now we see very technically he's pointing out how all these things. So how Brahman, Paramatma, you know, the Shastras, all these things work, the basis of authority. You see the flavor difference. You know, it's one person, but just
slightly different flavors. Yes, that's the whole point. He said, now if you go back, you'll see that all this technical stuff actually starts in verse 1 in the first canto. Because otherwise, it's generally thought, okay, second canto is technical, fifth canto is technical. And you saw the fifth canto, actually, the technical part is the shortest. It was mostly about how you can engage devotional, you know, your household position in the service. Right? So generally, it's thought, you know, the grihasthas aren't so interested in fifth canto. It's actually about how grihasthas can be engaged in devotional service. Yeah, no, it's interesting. How, because otherwise they're just words, we've heard the words, every devotee is familiar with these points being made, but the depth of what's inside, then that's greater and greater realization as the more we, for instance, we're blowing, it seems to be fairly serious. Huh? So it stops there? Or? Yeah, otherwise come over this side. Yeah, it's getting very interesting. Because this is a new thing. It started some years back where it blows when it rains. There's a storm, which is one thing, but then rain just comes down straight. Now there's this new thing where it rains and there's wind, but it's not a storm.
It was before, Maharaj. It was a storm like a...
No, that was a storm before. Oh, really? This is just rain with wind. But previously... You know, you go back 10 years, this doesn't happen.
Yeah.
So the weather's changed.
I wouldn't be surprised if it's kind of hailing.
No, you don't have to go that far. Okay. Lord Shankarsha continued, know me to be the Supreme Brahman, the all-pervading super soul, through whom the sleeping living entity can understand his dreaming condition. And his happiness beyond the activities of the material senses. That is to say, I am the cause of the activities of the sleeping living being.
How are we doing here?
That turns into your seat turns into that.
This is getting very serious.
Okay. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur continues, how then do I know the Antaryami? Know the Antaryami Atmanam, by whom the jiva, like a sleeping person, knows his sleeping state, and in a deep sleep state knows happiness of the Lord with no object. Be clearly understood that it is the Antaryami who daily dissolves the gunas during deep sleep by his mercy and gives the jiva, whose knowledge and bliss are covered by firm bondage of the gunas, an experience of his near guna happiness. Right? So, that means near guna here means there's no material connection. Right? We don't mean there's no qualities, this just means there's no material qualities. So that means when the living entity goes into deep sleep, Then Paramatma, he dissolves all the gunas that are connected with the living entity there. So then they experience that nirguna aspect of the Lord. Right? It means the transcendental position. That's why when you have deep sleep, you feel refreshed. Because you're not connected with the modes anymore. You actually get revitalized because you're in connection with the Lord, his actual transcendental state. So when you don't have a good sleep, means that you never got to deep sleep. If you dream all night or you toss and turn, then you don't get to that state, so the modes never went away. But if you remember in Manu described the same thing, that when the Lord sleeps, all the living entities go into him. Right? So at the end of the day of Brahma, at night when he sleeps, then all living entities go back into him. Right? But then also in the shorter times, when you sleep yourself at night, the living entity who's next to the Lord actually goes back into the Lord. Right? That's why we feel refreshed. So if you don't have deep sleep, that doesn't happen. Right? And they're thinking it's all to do with the brain waves, this, that, blah. You know, that's the point. They don't actually understand what's happening. But what's happening is just the Lord. And he's guiding the living entities and all these things. They want these different things. He creates the situation. And he guides them. Yes. Is that why pure devotees can sleep very little? Well, they actually, it's not about Paramatma, because they don't go unconscious. They are just absorbed in Bhagavan. They don't merge it, they've just absorbed him and his qualities. So it's the same thing, but on the Bhagavan platform. Well, for people when they sleep, it's the Brahman platform. Right? And they're refreshed. So yes, like you said. Now if you're absorbed like that in Bhagavan, how much better you'll feel in the morning. Right? So that's why then they sleep just a few hours. And so that's the point. They can, the Goswamis will sit up all night and talk about Krishna, and they'd be refreshed. The next day they go on. It's not that they'd be tired the next day. Right? Or they might sleep an hour and a half if they remember. Right? But they're sleeping, they would be also absorbed in the Lord. So it's, there's no difference for them whether they're sitting up and talking or they're sleeping. They're absorbed in the Lord. So they'll be refreshed either way.
Normal living in the actual sleep is mainly for the mind. And I heard Prabhupada mention it at one place.
Yeah, maybe for the mind, but it's the intelligence. Sleep is part of intelligence. Because otherwise there's too much happening, the intelligence gets dull. So in the sleep, then the intelligence becomes refreshed. Right? Okay. Right? Yeah. Never ends. How serious we are to get through this.
The last bit.
Yeah, yeah. And that's good. Always just the last bit. Okay. Okay. It should be clearly understood that as the Antayami who daily dissolves the gunas during deep sleep by his mercy and gives the jiva, whose knowledge and bliss are covered by firm bondage of gunas, and experience of his near guna happiness. So therefore you wake up in the morning refreshed, right? The jiva cannot independently get free from his bondage and then experience that happiness by his own strength. Understanding the Antaryami as Brahman with no qualities. Understand that Antaryami is Brahman with no qualities. Also understand Brahman as me, Bhagavan, with qualities. Right? So in other words, Brahman is transcendence. So there's Brahman is Brahman, Brahman is Paramatma, Brahman is Bhagavan. Right? Because Brahman just means, you know, Krishna's, who Krishna is. Right? Does that make sense? Okay. So that Antayami is Brahman. That means he is transcendental. He is all-pervading in all these things. So we talk about all-pervading, all-knowing, all these this and that. We're talking about Antayami. But it's also the same qualities as Brahman. Right? Because the Lord and Paramatma and Brahman are non-different, though Krishna is the original. They're based on him. Right? I, one person, exist as Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. These are not my first, second, and third forms. I have only one form. It is said, Arto, Dhurgata, Iva, Bhavati Swarupa Dvaya Bhavat. Nothing is impossible for you because you have only one form. Right? So we'll take it, you know, there's all these things are different, but actually they're not. There's only one form. Right? It's just these are different aspects of this one form. So when we think about him as a person in relationship and in affection, then we're dealing with him as, then we're seeing him as Bhagavan. We just see him as the Supreme Lord who's controlling everything. Then we're seeing him as Paramatma. Right? We're seeing how he's all-pervading, he's eternal, he's unchangeable, and we're seeing him as Brahman. But it's the same person. That's why it's not that he has three different forms, he has to coordinate it. It's one. So they're all happening. They're all it's him at once. So that's why he's in a different category. So this is important to understand how we're not God, because this is what God can do. Can we do this? No, we're not God. Therefore, we should accept God as God and, you know, move on with our life. Okay. Is that
so? According to the realization, we can jump on Bhagavan realization unless we develop some type of a relationship.
Yes, yes. But that relationship is given by the devotees. So by associating with the devotees in that, then we develop. So the point is that we have some. That's why the deity is there. So we have a relationship. But then how much, how we relate. Because then if we go to Mangalarka, you said, because we're supposed to, then when you get there, who's standing there? Lakshmi Narayan. It's Radha and Krishna. But they're going to interact with us as Lakshmi Narayan, because that's how we deal with them. Right? But when we come there because we want to see them, we want to interact with them, then we'll be interacting with them. Lord Shankarshana continued, if one's dreams during sleep are merely subject matters witnessed by the Supersoul, how can the living entity, who is different from the Supersoul, remember the activities of the dreams? Right? So the point is living entities are experiencing the dreams. Right? Because what he mentioned before is it all goes away. That's deep sleep. Right? When you're in dreaming, then you're experiencing. The Lord's saying, you're saying. The experiences of one person cannot be understood by another. Therefore, the knower of the facts, the living entity who inquires into the incidents manifested in dreams and wakefulness, is different from the circumstantial activities. Right? So the living entity is different from what he's experiencing. That knowing factor is Brahman. Because what you're knowing is Brahman. Because everything's created from Brahman. Here is Brahman means this transcendence. Right? See, the problem is we're used to the concept of Brahman means impersonal Brahman, but that's not what Brahman is. Brahman just means transcendence. So we can take all points that Krishna is Brahman. We don't mean that he's Brahman as in the Brahma Jyoti. We mean he is transcendence. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So therefore, what you're experiencing, the ability to experience, that's all Krishna. Right? So whatever's in the wakeful state that you're experiencing, whatever's experienced in the dream state, that's all Krishna. Because it's his potency, but it's not him as a person. You can't say, oh, my dreams are all transcendental because it's all Krishna, so... No. It means it's that Krishna, it's his potency, so it's non-different from him, because there's nothing different from him. Right? So, therefore, understanding this, one will then try to see everything in connection with the Lord. That
right? I heard from, I think it was Virasami who mentioned that you can judge your consciousness, your level of advancement by the dreams you have. Is it in line with that?
It just means that if that's a different aspect. It means if you're more purified, then you're, in other words, dreams are made up of what were you experienced during the day. Right? So the thing is then, you know, there at some point, whatever is thoughts, then that's there. So if you're more Krishna conscious, so then what you're dreaming about is, you know, Krishna and playing in the fields or, you know, going out and preaching, then you definitely would have to admit that, yes, the person is more advanced.
Probably he was
talking
about himself.
Yes, that's a very good possibility. That you can tell he's advancing because his dreams are becoming better. Right? Before it was, you know, Krishna's pastimes, but it was in black and white, you know, like that. And, you know, and only 8 mm, but now it's, you know, 72 mm in full Technicolor, right? You know, like that. So it's getting better. Right. So in other words, the dreams aren't just seen by the Lord, because otherwise how do we know them? And if we see them, that means we're separate from them. That, in other words, the quality of knowing belongs to the living entities and to the Supreme Soul. Thus, the living entity can also experience the activities of dreams and wakefulness. In both stages, the knower is unchanged, but is qualitatively one with the Supreme Brahman, because seeing comes from Krishna. So that's a quality of Brahman. The living entity, being part and parcel of Brahman, is able also to see. But his seeing is not independent of the Supreme's seeing. Krishna sees, we can see. That's why he says, well, the Paramatma is seeing, otherwise how can we see? But it's not just him seeing, because the living entity is also seeing. And it's not that it's all illusion like that, because the living entity is seeing it. So he's separate from it. You understand? Because otherwise, you know, they'll try to say there's only the super soul, there's no living entities, or there's living entities, there's no super soul, or there's only material energy and it's all illusion, we don't exist. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Can we say that what we see, super soul also can see, but what
no,
he
it means,
sees, we don't, not necessarily.
No, it means he sees whatever we see, and then what he sees beyond that, we don't see. So we see what's within this body, he sees what's in all bodies. Yes, yes. In other words, there's no more philosophy than Bhagavad Gita gives. It's just deeper and deeper understanding, further examples, bringing out more of the practice of it. So Gita is all the philosophy, and then Bhagavatam's how the philosophy and how you're going to apply it. Never knew that. See, in the Dham, everything's conscious. Okay. Maybe, is that the mat that I stepped on yesterday? And I should have rolled it up nicely. When a living entity, thinking himself different from me, forgets his spiritual identity of qualitative oneness with me in eternity, knowledge, and bliss, his material conditional life begins. In other words, instead of identifying his interest with mine, he becomes interested in his bodily expansions like his wife, children, and material possessions. Right? So this is the specific application, right? This is the subjective. The other one is the objective, right? Means that here. When a living entity, thinking himself different from me, forgets the spiritual identity of qualitative oneness with me in eternity, knowledge, and bliss, his material conditional life begins. So when he doesn't see that I am part and parcel of Krishna, I am servant of Krishna, he sees himself separate from that. That's when material life begins. And Krishna says, in other words, then when he identifies himself with wife, children, possessions, all these different things, that is the material life. You know what I'm saying? So the one is the generic how we get here. So in other words, the objective is the overall. And the subjective is then how it applies in the specific case. Right? You know, like we say, hridai daubalya, the weakness of heart. The primary is I'm the controller and enjoyer. Right? Or the subjective is, oh, I'm in this particular body, I enjoy this way, I, you know, don't enjoy in that way. Right? I control this, I enjoy that. The next life, that will change. So the subjective is always changing. But the objective always remains. Does that make
sense?
In what he's talking about, yes. Because it's a principle. So you're going to have an objective and a subjective. Within that subjective, it'll have objective and subjective. Within that subjective, it'll be objective and subjective. So it just keeps going down. But when you come back, the ultimate objective is Krishna. Right? So it's just another term being used. But otherwise it's primary and secondary. Right? The primary is what you're trying to accomplish, you know, in concept. And the secondary is how the forms that it looks like how you're accomplishing it. But if you understand the primary, then depending upon the individuals and the situations, the secondary can be adjusted. But the primary is never adjusted. In this way, by the influence of his actions, one body comes from another. getting stuck in there. Okay. One body comes from another, and after one death, another death takes place. So you have this body, you'll get another body. You die in this body, you'll die in the next body. So one doesn't have to worry. See, how you say, that stable continuation, the eternal position of birth and death, will go on forever. You don't have to worry about it. You know, if you have any anxiety, if it will go on, you don't have to. Yes.
I have a great opportunity of experiencing this almost on a daily basis in the hospital where I work.
Because
sometimes the day before that person was alive, and the next day that I go to work, they say in the room, please talk to the nurse before you come into this room, because the person is dead. No?
Yes.
Normal.
Yeah. No, all that's pointing at is he's just saying, by the influences of his actions, the living entity, then if he sees himself in connection with the Lord, he functions on the actual eternal platform. Which means then the situations, everything, that's all eternal. Right? Or he doesn't see himself in relation to the Lord, then everything he has is temporary. Whatever you have now, that will go away. Right? So that's our choice, depending upon our actions. Right? And our actions are based upon our contemplation. Right? We contemplate, we make a choice, then we act. So it's when we get to action, that's where the reaction is. If we're only thinking about it, we don't have the reaction. Right? Not in Kali Yuga, at least. Doesn't mean it doesn't affect your consciousness.
Right. Yeah. Srila Prabhupada comments. Generally, the Mayavadi philosophers or persons influenced by Mayavadi philosophers think themselves as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the cause of their conditional life. As stated by the Vaishnav poet Jagarananda Pandit in his Prema Vivarta, Krishna Bahirmukha Hoy Bhoga Vancha Kare Nikata Sta Maya Tare Japatiya Dhare. As soon as a living entity forgets his constitutional position and endeavors to become one with the Supreme, his conditional life begins. Right. So whether you're trying to be one with the Supreme that I am the controller, or one with the Supreme that I am the enjoyer, or you mix it up, you know, it doesn't matter. Yes, there's plenty of opportunity for mixing like that. It's a very wide-ranging menu. The conception that the Supreme Brahman and the living entity are equal, not only in quality but also in quantity, is the cause of conditional life. If one forgets the difference between the Supreme Lord and the living entity, his conditioned life begins.
So he pointed out that the living entity and the Lord are non-different by not seeing this difference. By seeing a difference, one's conditioned. Now he's pointing out, if you don't also see the difference, you're conditioned. So you have to simultaneously understand the oneness and the difference. Does that make sense? Right? One in quality, different in quantity. So since we're the small, he's the big, natural, we assist the big. Right? But the fun of the big is they like to assist the small who wants to assist the big.
Lord Sankarsana continues. A human being can attain perfection in life by self-realization through the Vedic literature and its practical application. This is possible especially for a human being born in India, the land of piety. Alright, so therefore we realize the Vedic literature and its practical application. So we realize what it's talking about, and we realize how to practically apply, or we practically apply, therefore we realize. Right?
We hear, we practically apply, we realize. Right? That realization gives us a better understanding, so our application is better, our realization is better. So it just keeps getting better and better.
A man who obtains birth in such a convenient position but does not understand itself is unable to achieve the highest perfection, even if he is exalted to life in the higher planetary systems. remembering the great trouble found in the field of activities performed for fruit or results, and remembering how one receives the reverse of the results one desires, whether from material actions or from the fruit of activities recommended in the Vedic literatures. An intelligent man should cease from the desire for fruit of actions, for by such endeavors one cannot achieve the ultimate goal of life. Right? So in other words, having the desire for material benefits, whatever it is, right, in karma or jnana, you know, in whatever area, you know, if it's social, it's political, it's economic, it's the sense gratification, it doesn't matter. It's always going to be trouble for the living entity. Because unless we see these things in connection with the Lord, they're always going to be trouble. Right? Because trouble starts when we see ourselves separate from the Lord. So whatever we're doing, we see what we're doing in connection with Krishna. Not that, oh, I can connect my sense gratification to Krishna. But I see it, this is about pleasing Krishna. That's when we're on the transcendental platform. Right? So it's not just connecting everything, you know, just means, oh, I figured out how to connect, you know, something. It's about how it's going to please Krishna. Right? So if you're doing a recommended activity, that's your duty, then technically you don't have to change the duty. Right? I may be materialistic, I may be mixed, I may be on the pure platform. I don't have to change the activity. Right? Arjuna is on the pure platform. Right? Duryodhana is definitely on the material platform. But there's no difference in the duties. Right? Does that make sense? But if we see that what we're interested in then is only being applied because of my interest. I'm applying it according to what the Vedas recommend, but it's not that what I'm doing is necessarily a recommended activity that I have to do as a regular part of my life. It's available if I wanted to. Does that make sense? Like Duryodhana, he does not have to have that war. Right? But because the war is there, therefore the Pandavas are following their duty and applying themselves in the war. Right? So for them, they're following their duties and they're doing it to please Krishna. But Duryodhana is actually an unnecessary activity, though he's following Shastra. But he doesn't need to have the war. It's only because of his material desire. Therefore, he feels that there's the need for the war. Does that make sense? Those things will change. Right? Because sometimes there's a confusion about, well, if you take up Krishna consciousness, either everything changes, or if you take up Krishna consciousness, nothing changes, so I don't have to adjust anything. But the point is no, it's about are my senses being brought in line with Krishna's senses. When that's being done, that's devotional service. Then there's no problem. That's why then it says that we use what's recommended. Because we use what's recommended, it's always easier. We don't have to change it. Does that make sense? Good? On the other hand, if one acts without desires for fruit or results, in other words, if one engages in devotional activities, he can achieve the highest goal of life with freedom from miserable conditions. Considering this, one should cease from material desires. Because if you give up material desires, then there's no material problems. Material problems go with the desire. Right? That's the way it works. As husband and wife, a man and woman plan together to attain happiness and decrease unhappiness, working jointly in many ways. But because their activities are full of desires, these activities are never a source of happiness, and they never diminish distress. On the contrary, they are a cause of great unhappiness. One should understand that the activities of persons who are proud of their material experience bring only results contradictory to those such persons conceive while awake. Right, what they conceive, I'll do this, this is what I'll get. What the results they get are always contradictory to that.
It may be the form they wanted, but it doesn't give them the experience they thought they'd get. Or many times they don't even get the form they were expecting because they don't actually know the science that they're dealing with. They're acting according to Shastra. Generally, they'll get the form they expect, but what kind of experience they get from it, that may not be it. Right? So that's why then Sankarshan is recommending giving up material desire. It means we're engaging our senses according to our nature in the Lord's service. So therefore, anything that we'd be interested in would be fulfilled, but we're not doing it for that purpose. We're doing it to please Krishna. Right? So just letting go of that's the difficult part. We hear it, okay, but then, but will we be happy? Yes. There's always that. The point is, as it's pointing out, is if you look at the alternative, we deal with the material, we're not happy, so then what's wrong with doing it for Krishna? Right? Because even when we're looking at, will I be happy doing that? Well, we're not happy doing what we're doing now, so what's the loss? Does that make sense? Yeah? So Krishna, so when you do it that, in other words, the same exact activities but being done to please the Lord then becomes the source of happiness. But those activities done without considering the Lord, those are always a source of distress. Right? Even if you get what you want, it's a source of distress. The man has no money, he wants tons of money, he gets tons of money. Now everybody wants his money. So is he actually any happier? You understand? So that's the thing. He got the form, but it still is a cause of distress. Right? Does that make sense? Indra. Yes, because he wants the lordship, but then he gets the distress of Ritrasura. Like that. So it's always going to be there. That's why if we just do it in connection with the Lord, then these problems all go away. Not that the situations aren't there, but they don't bother us. Because they're just service. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay. One should understand the activities of persons who are proud of their material experience bring only results contrary to those such persons conceive while awake, sleeping, and deeply sleeping. One should further understand that the spirit soul, although very difficult for the materialist to perceive, is above all these conditions. And by the strength of one's discrimination, one should give up the desire for fruitive activity results in the present life and in the next. Right? Not that, okay, this life I'll give it up, but in the next I'll enjoy, like those who follow Karmakanda really strictly. This lifetime they're very austere, doing all the yajnas and austerities and penances and charities and, following all the rules. So this life is, they give up desire this life, but next life, then they're going to enjoy when they get to the heavenly planets. So therefore, this life and the next. Right? Or, okay, I'll be austere this lifetime, and then I'll go back to Godhead, and then I'll enjoy like anything. No. So it's just, no. It's just, we give up the desire that we're going to be the enjoyer. Krishna's the enjoyer. We automatically enjoy. Yes.
In Calcutta, I was in the Bhagavatam class, and Prabhu spoke that in case, basically the class in Hindi, but I managed to take his point that sometimes for the sake of creating the facilities for our spiritual life, we use karma and jnana, and there is a danger in using those things if we don't use properly.
Point is it's material energy. It means you're going to have activity and knowledge. To do anything, you have to have activity and knowledge. So it's not a separate system. See, bhakti is the system. Within that, there's activities of bhakti, there's knowledge within bhakti. Right? But now, when we use that connected to the Lord, then we call that bhakti. when it's more about the activities or more about the knowledge, then we call it karma yoga, jnana yoga. Right? Or karma misra bhakti, jnana misra bhakti. But it's not that the paths are a separate path, technically. It's just one path. It's Krishna's path. It's either you're going towards Krishna or away from Krishna. Does that make sense?
Yes.
One should further understand that the spirit soul, although very difficult... Okay, thus becoming experienced in transcendental knowledge, one should become my devotee. Persons who try to reach the ultimate goal of life must expertly observe the Supreme Absolute Person and the living entity, who are one in quality in their relationship as part and whole. This is the ultimate understanding of life. There's no better truth than this. Right? So this is actual truth, not who did what. Right? You know, here it's like who is the Lord, right? And then what is he doing? So the creation, maintenance, destruction, the relationship with the living entity. This is the ultimate truth. If it was just about the conditioning of living entities, the material energy, then less important. O King, if you accept this conclusion of mine, being unattached to material enjoyment, adhering to me with great faith and thus becoming proficient and fully aware of knowledge and its practical application in life, you will achieve the highest perfection by attaining me. 58-64. Sri Sukadeva Goswami continued, after thus instructing Chitraketu and assuring him of perfection in this way, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the Supreme Spiritual Master, the Supreme Soul, Sankarsana, disappeared from that place as Chitraketu looked on. So this is one of the more ideal last pages. The one that says, there are no questions. It even has two Vastutraya questions. Huh? Yeah, in other words, you should be familiar with these verses and what they mean, that's all. These are the important verses to them. That's the idea. Chapter 17. Mother Parvati curses Chitraketu. Pratigya. A devotee always accepts punishment from anybody as the mercy of the Lord. The particular of this chapter is taken from Srila Prabhupada's purport to verse 17. Chapter 17 summarizes questions and answers. Mother Parvati puts forth a few rhetorical questions while criticizing the behavior of King Chitraketu in verse 11, but they do not follow under the study. Likewise, King Chitraketu utters some rhetorical questions in his reply in verse 20, and Lord Shiva asks one in verse 27. These also do not fall under the study. Adhyaya Prakashita. The 17th chapter describes how Chitraketu, as leader of the Vididharas, laughed at Shiva and received a curse from Shiva's wife to become Vritrasura. After personally talking with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, King Chitraketu enjoyed life in his airplane with the women of the Vididhara planet.
Yeah. But maybe after his son died, they were all kind of a bit distressed. And they spoke to the Lord. I mean, the Lord spoke to them. We kind of get a feeling that they should be heading towards Vanaprastha.
Well, it didn't say. It just means he's hanging out with the Vidyataras. Because that's what Vidyataras do.
Enjoyed life.
Enjoyed life. But that could be just sitting around and chatting or, you know, singing songs.
So that's
That's another thing. See, the thing is when you get up to the Vidyataras and that, they don't have all these rules. Those rules are our rules.
It's not about the Vidyataras. It's more about what happened.
Yes, but the point is by his chanting the mantra, he became the king of the Vidyatara planet. So naturally, then he would be following the rules according to the Vidyatara planet. Well, if he didn't become king of the Vidyatara planet, then he and his wife probably would have gone to the forest. Right, and left all the other, how you say, 9,999,999 99 other wives to whatever they wanted to do. Yeah. Does it actually matter? You know, you want to know if he went direct, or went through Howard Station, or did he go through Shelter Station, or, you know. What's the point? Yeah, so I'm just saying the point is this here. If it's of important, it'll be asked, and then it'll come up. But somehow or another, by chanting the mantra, he's seeing the Lord. But we're not saying, hey, can I chant that mantra? You know, we're just saying, hey, how did he get to the Vidyahara planet? Okay, well, it was right there. Okay, now the wind. Engaging in the congregational chanting of the glories of the Lord, he began flying his airplane and traveling in outer space. Did that answer your question? Just having kirtan means otherwise we could follow the path that you're saying here. That would mean the kirtan mela would just be brahmacharis and sannyasis.
Sorry.
You know.
That's
Sorry?
That's
preaching
also for another stuff.
But it means you go to the kirtan mela. Everyone's doing kirtan. All the girls are up there dancing and this and that. And this is what goes on. You just are chanting.
I'm doing it differently.
This is what he's doing. This is not what we're doing. Because the point is this is not setting the example here for. That's already been described by Rishabdev and by Priyavrata all these others. They've defined how grihastha life goes, how vanaprastha goes, like that. This is just, they're trying to put together the story of how you have Vritrasura. So the important story is Vritrasura. Then how did he become Vritrasura? Then, you know, he had to come to that position of realization. How did he get there? That's from his lifestyle as Chittaketu. So that he's on with the Vidyadharas and this and that, but they're on the transcendental position, so what does it matter? One day while traveling like this, he wandered into the bowers of Sumeru Mountain, where he came upon Lord Shiva embracing Parvati, surrounded by an assembly of siddhas, charanas, and great sages. Seeing Lord Shiva in that condition, Chittaketu laughed very loudly. But Parvati became very angry at him and cursed him. Because of this curse, Chittaketu later appeared as the demon Vritrasura. Chittaketu, however, was not at all afraid of Parvati's curse, and thus he spoke as follows. Everyone in human society enjoys happiness and distress according to his past deeds, and in this way travels in the mature world. Therefore, no one is responsible for his happiness and distress. One is controlled by the influence of material nature in the material world, yet one thinks himself the doer of everything. In this material world, which is made of the external energy of the Supreme Lord, one is sometimes cursed and sometimes favored, and thus he sometimes enjoys in the upper planetary systems and sometimes suffers in the lower planets. But all these situations are the same because they are within this material world. None of these positions has any factual existence, for all of them are temporary. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the ultimate controller because the material world is created, maintained, and annihilated under his control, while he nonetheless remains neutral to those different transformations of the material world in time and space. The material external energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is in charge of this material world. The Lord helps the world by creating situations for the living entities within it. When Chittaketu spoke in this way, all the members in the great assembly in which Lord Shiva and Parvati were present were astonished. Right, because like that, they see a guy flying around in an airplane with a whole gaggle of Vidyadhara women, and so naturally, what are they going to conclude? Right? But they're just doing Harinam Sankirtan, that's all. You know?
That he was laughing at Shiva and Parvati for the same reason that we concluded what he's doing.
No, but it's even different. He's looking at the similarity of the situation. He's transcendental. But externally you see him sitting there with a bunch of ladies, you know, in an airplane. But he's situated. And then Lord Shiva is transcendental. But he's sitting there, you know, in the assembly of sages with his wife sitting on his lap with his arm around his wife. Because you'd expect in the assembly of sages, you know, everybody's going to be very formal. So he's just laughing at how similar this is. You have two people on the you know, transcendental platform, but externally it looks like they're on the mundane platform. That's why he was laughing. So Parvati didn't understand that. You know, because she's there and he's laughing, he thinks it's a weird situation. That means that she's not part of the scene and she doesn't like that. Right? So therefore there's the problem. You know, or that you would think that Shiva's, you know, innocent, but he's actually laughing because he sees the transcendental position of Shiva. But she thinks it's because he's seeing the material. Then Lord Shiva began speaking about the devotees of the Lord. A devotee is neutral in all conditions of life, whether in the heavenly planets or hellish planets, whether liberated from the material world or conditioned by it, whether blessed with happiness or subject to distress. These are all merely dualities created by the external energy. Being influenced by the external energy, the living entity accepts a gross and subtle material body, and in this illusory position he apparently suffers miseries, although everyone is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. The so-called demigods consider themselves independent lords, and in this way they are misled from understanding that all living entities are part of the Supreme. This chapter concludes by glorifying the devotee and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the demigods here, their positions are nice, and they have, you know, their offices that they run. So they think that because of this, there's some independence. So then in this way they forget their relationship with the Lord. Right? So the devotees, though, as Lord Shiva explains, they're not affected by these things. Nice, not nice, big, small, it doesn't matter. They do well. Shloka Nisharana. Summary of verses. Verses 1 to 15. King Chitraketu jokingly criticized Lord Shiva and gets cursed. 16 to 26. King Chitraketu accepts the curse and asks Mother Parvati's forgiveness. 27 to 41. Lord Shiva glorifies the Vaishnavas, and Chitraketu becomes Vritrasura. Verses 1 to 15. Srila Sukadeva Goswami said, after offering obeisances to the directions from which Ananta, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, had disappeared, Chitraketu began traveling in outer space as the head of the Vididharas. Being praised by great sages and saints and by the inhabitants of Siddhaloka and Charanaloka, Chitraketu, the most powerful mystic yogi, wandered about enjoying life for millions of years. With bodily strength and senses free from deterioration, he traveled within the valleys of Sumeru Mountain, which is the place of perfection for various kinds of mystic power. In those valleys, he enjoyed life with the women of Vidyadhara Loka by chanting the glories of the Supreme Lord Hari.
Is that the Bhumandala? They live in that area?
It's not... I don't remember where they are. They're not on this part of... Yes, here it would be there, but Sumeru goes all the way up. So you have... It's connected here, and it connects, I think, through all the planetary systems below. But above, then, all the planets are just held there by the ropes of the wind. But it's not that there's not places on Meru itself, that there all the gardens and all that, they're also... Many, you know, all these different demigods and great sages and all that, they may live there, perform their austerities, or go there for you know, having a picnic or, you know, that kind of stuff.
So they don't necessarily live in the antariksha. They might.
The Vididharas specifically, I would expect, they're part of the antariksha. But Meru Mountain is, I don't know if it's defined in that way. Right? Because you're going to have everybody there. But in one sense, you could say it's antariksha because it's not the earth, and it's not the heavenly planets. but it's heavenly regions, so they are come down from there and hang out there also. So it may be counted as far. I'm not sure. We can try to find out. Srila Prabhupada comments, it is to be understood that Mara Chitraketu, although surrounded by beautiful women from Vidyadhara Loka, did not forget to glorify the Lord by chanting the holy name of the Lord. It has been proved in many places that one who is not contaminated by any material condition, who is a pure devotee engaged in chanting the glories of the Lord, should be understood to be perfect. Right? So we see Haridas Thakur saying, Maya herself comes and hangs out, and he just chants and everything like that. And she ends up, you know, taking initiation, right? So she's impressed. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, one time while King Chitraketu was traveling in outer space on a brilliantly effulgent airplane given to him by Lord Vishnu, he saw Lord Shiva surrounded by siddhas and charanas. Lord Shiva was sitting in an assembly of great saintly persons and embracing Parvati on his lap with his arm. Chitraketu laughed loudly and spoke within the hearing of Parvati. Srila Prabhupada paraphrases Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary. The Supreme Personality of Godhead wanted to bring Chitraketu to Vaikuntha Loka as soon as possible. Otherwise, he was there millions of years flying around and doing this, right? The Lord's plan was that Chitraketu be cursed by Parvati to become Vritrasura so that in his next life he could quickly return home back to Godhead. There have been many instances in which a devotee acting as a demon has been brought to the kingdom of God by the mercy of the Lord. For Parvati to be embraced by Lord Shiva was natural, in a relationship between husband and wife. This was nothing extraordinary for Chitraketu to see. Nonetheless, Chitraketu laughed loudly to see Lord Shiva in that situation, even though he should not have done so. Right? So in other words, it's not a strange, so why laughing? So why he's laughing is on a transcendental platform, but as far as etiquette goes, there is no need to laugh. Right? Because otherwise he's transcendental, they're both transcendental, so what's the big deal? Nothing to get involved with. So by laughing, then Parvati might become upset. So he shouldn't do like that. But at the same time, his reason for laughing was not, it was technically in glorification of Shiva. But still, there's etiquette. Right?
Since that Lord arranged it very specifically according to one devotee's situation where...
Yes, yes. Because if you arranged it according to someone else's situation, then how would it work? If Chitraketu wasn't there, then how would Parvati curse him? So...
Yes, very
specifically. Yes. Yes. Thus he was eventually cursed, and this curse was the cause of his returning home back to Godhead, right? So that he laughed was the Lord's arrangement. That she cursed was also the Lord's arrangement. Because otherwise she could also just, you know, understand what was going on, or laugh, or just say, you know, don't do like this. Yeah. Yeah, yes, yes.
That's,
yes, yes, have to be prepared. Today, this guy's flying by with the Vidyadharas, and he's going to laugh. Okay, I'm not going. Chitraketu said, Lord Shiva, the spiritual master of the general populace, is the best of all living entities who have accepted material bodies. He enunciates the system of religion, right? He is the best of all living entities who have accepted material bodies, right? Does that mean he has a material body?
Yes.
Want to try again? He's Shivatattva. So he is the best of all those who have accepted, means of those who have accepted, then they're only of a certain level. He's better than that. Right? And when we say the best of, means there's a connection with, so therefore he benefits all living entities. That's why he's called Shiva, or auspicious. Does that make sense? So just because the words are like that doesn't mean he's of that. Does that make sense? He enunciates the system of religion, yet how wonderful it is that he is embracing his wife, Parvati, in the midst of an assembly of great saintly persons. Lord Shiva, whose hair is matted on his head, has certainly undergone great austerities and penances. Indeed, he is the president of the assembly of strict followers of Vedic principles. Nevertheless,
He is seated with his wife on his lap in the midst of saintly persons and is embracing her as if he were a shameless, ordinary human being. Srila Prabhupada comments. Chitraketu appreciated the exalted position of Lord Shiva, and therefore he remarked at how wonderful it was that Lord Shiva was acting like an ordinary human being. He appreciated Lord Shiva's position, but when he saw Lord Shiva sitting in the midst of saintly persons and acting like a shameless ordinary man, he was astonished. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur remarks that although Chitraketu criticized Lord Shiva, he did not offend Lord Shiva like Daksha. Daksha considered Lord Shiva insignificant, but Chitraketu expressed his wonder at Lord Shiva's being situated in that way. Chitraketu continued, ordinary conditioned persons generally embrace their wives and enjoy their company in solitary places. How wonderful it is that Lord Mahadev, although a great master of austerity, is embracing his wife openly in the midst of an assembly of great saints. Srila Prabhupada comments, Chitraketu appreciated how great Lord Shiva was to be unaffected even in that situation. Therefore, Chitraketu was not an offender. He merely expressed his wonder. Right? Because otherwise you would take it that it's like this. So how is it he's able to do that? Because he's so transcendentally situated. Right? Because generally you don't do that. But, you know, Shiva's an avatar, so he may do that.
And they say that they're also not affected? Because
no, because they're transcendental also. Or they're, you know, greatly elevated. So it doesn't matter because it's Shiva and his wife. It's not anybody else. You know, if he was sitting there with Menaka or something, then they might kind of, you know, like that. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, my dear king, after hearing Chitraketu's statement, Lord Shiva, the most powerful personality, whose knowledge is fathomless, simply smiled and remained silent. And all the members of the assembly followed the Lord by not saying anything. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Why did Shiva smile? Lord Shiva thought, Chitraketu wants to establish the truth about my conduct in this world. Because Shiva had fathomless knowledge not understood by anyone, he understood Chitraketu's intention. Chitraketu's intention was as follows. Shiva is the Lord. There is no harm if he performs acts which appear wrong. Those who are ignorant will criticize him, for their offense will be... And for their offense will be destroyed, like Daksha. If today I can establish that he has proper conduct, it will be beneficial for the world. Vishnu benefits the world because he follows proper conduct, but Shiva is inauspicious because of his apparent misconduct. He should not have infamy. Shiva thought, I will not become angry at his harsh words, which are beneficial for the world. The assembly, understanding Shiva's intention, also remained silent and did not become angry. If Chitraketu had intended to criticize Shiva, the assembly would have blocked their ears and left, right? Because they didn't say, because otherwise, you know, having that respect for Shiva, they would have blocked their ears and left. Right? So, therefore, if something's there in the assembly, it's not going properly in the way of connection with Guru and Krishna and there's something like that, and one's supposed to leave, but one's supposed to block one's ears as one's leaving. One, you don't hear anything more. Two, people understand why you're leaving. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, not knowing the prowess of Lord Shiva and Parvati, Chitraketu strongly criticized them. His statements were not at all pleasing, and therefore the goddess Parvati, being very angry, spoke as follows to Chitraketu, who thought himself better than Lord Shiva in controlling the senses. Srila Prabhupada comments, although Chitraketu never meant to insult Lord Shiva, he should not have criticized the Lord, even though the Lord was transgressing social customs. It is said, Teji yasam na doshaya, one who is very powerful should be understood to be faultless. For example, one should not find faults with the sun, although it evaporates urine from the street. The most powerful cannot be criticized by an ordinary man, or even by a great personality. Chitraketu should have known that Lord Shiva, although sitting in that way, was not to be criticized. The difficulty was that Chitraketu, having become a great devotee of Lord Vishnu, Shankarshana, was somewhat proud of having achieved Lord Shankarshana's favor and therefore thought that he could now criticize anyone, even Lord Shiva. This kind of pride in a devotee is never tolerated. A Vaishnava should always remain very humble and meek and offer respects to others.
Srila Prabhupada points out here this side and before.
Yes, because in other words, we should not be criticizing Chitraketu either. The point is in other words, Chitraketu is meaning to point out the glory of Lord Shiva and that people should not think otherwise of him, right? So in other words, he's transcendental, he's beyond the rules, that he can do this. Even though it appears that it's wrong socially, then he's beyond these things. He's acting in a way beneficial for everyone, right? But at the same time as that being done, there is the etiquette, so one wouldn't say those things. And so then we have to be very careful that we've done some service, we become proud of that service, and now we think we can make comments about everybody.
You know, so we have to. That's Kanishka.
It's maybe here you're talking about Uttamas here, so.
No, but that attitude of.
Maybe, but Kanishkas generally have that attitude. It's the standard. Here we see it's a rare thing like that. So, point is that it's to be given up. But. Trinada Pisuni Chena, Taroda Pisa Hishnuna, Amanina Maanadena, Kirtaniya Sadahari. One should chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind, thinking oneself lower than the straw in the street. One should be more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, and ready to offer all respects to others. In such a state of mind, one can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, 17:31. A Vaishnava should not try to minimize anyone else's position. It is better to remain humble and meek and chant the Hare Krishna mantra. The word nirjitat ma bhimanine indicates that Chitraketu thought himself a better controller of the senses than Lord Shiva, although actually he was not. Because all of these considerations, Mother Parvati was somewhat angry at Chitraketu. Right, so it's an arrangement of the Lord that this all comes up. So technically it shouldn't be done. Right? So even when one's on a great position, one has to be very careful. You got us.
I'm sorry, Maharaj. This was done just for the sake of the pastime, right?
What do you mean by the sake of the pastime? It means they all got together before and said, well, I'll say this and you say that. And then, yeah.
No rehearsal, but...
No, the point is it's Krishna's pastime.
Yes.
Not necessarily that they know that they're part of this pastime. You know what I'm saying? So it's the point is that whatever your position, you still have to be careful. Yeah. Right. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Right, because everybody is still people. Even if they're once advanced, one's still people. Yeah? Yeah.
What's the same situation that happened with Rupa Goswami?
Yeah, you could say. But that was, he was laughing at something else.
Mm-hmm.
He was laughing at the Lord's pastime. He didn't see that the other person was going by. Right? But still, it applies. Because there is the social etiquette. Right? In other words, there's the position, but then there's also the etiquette. Goddess Parvati said, alas, has this upstart now received a post from which to punish shameless persons like us? He has been appointed ruler, carrier of the rod of punishment. Oh, has he been appointed ruler, carrier of the rod of punishment? Is he now the only master of everything? Alas, Lord Brahma, who has taken his birth from the lotus flower, does not know the principles of religion, nor do the great saints like Bhrigu and Narada, nor the four Kumaras headed by Sanat Kumar. Manu and Kapila also have forgotten the religious principles. I suppose it is to be because of this that they have not tried to stop Lord Shiva from behaving improperly. Right? Because they've forgotten all the rules, that's why they've never tried to stop. Right? It means if they knew the rules, then they would have stopped him before Chitraketu came along. So they have not tried to stop Lord Shiva from behaving improperly. This Chitraketu is the lowest of Kshatriyas, for he has impudently overridden Brahma and the other demigods by insulting Lord Shiva, upon whose lotus feet they always meditate. Lord Shiva is personified religion and the spiritual master of the entire world, and therefore Chitraketu must be punished. Again.
Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura elaborates. He surpassed the devas, meaning that by his constant criticism he considered the devas in the assembly to be ignorant. He chastises the guru of the world, right? So, because in that assembly are all sages and demigods, right? But he's criticizing that they don't know. He surpassed them because they're not making any comment, but he is. Srila Prabhupada adds, and he chastised the guru of the world. So Lord Shiva is everybody's guru. Srila Prabhupada adds, all the members of the assembly were exalted brahmanas and self-realized souls, but they did not say anything about the conduct of Lord Shiva, who was embracing the goddess Parvati on his lap. Chitraketu nonetheless criticized Lord Shiva, and therefore the opinion of Parvati that was that he should be punished. Mother Parvati continued, this person is puffed up because of his achievements, thinking, I am the best. He does not deserve to approach the shelter of Lord Vishnu's lotus feet, which are worshipped by all saintly persons, for he is impudent, thinking himself greatly important. Srila Prabhupada comments, the devotee thinks that he is very much advanced in devotional service. He is considered puffed up and unfit to sit beneath the shelter of the Lord's lotus feet. Mother Parvati continued, O impudent one, my dear son, now take birth in a low, sinful family of demons, so you will not commit such an offense again towards exalted saintly persons in this world. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, after cursing him, she thought, I have cursed an innocent devotee. Thus repentant, she says, O son. Just as a mother beats a misbehaving son with her own hand and has natural affection for him, I punish you. That is the meaning. She acts as a mother should. Do not do this again. When a child misbehaves in someone else's house, she punishes the child and says, uncontrollable child, do not do this again. However, her curse did not affect Chitraketu. Rather, being born as Ritrasura increased his prema. Since the devotees at the level of prema do not consider any difference between obtaining a body of a devotee or demon. Right? So here we see he's on this advanced platform. Right? And so then, here on this platform of prema, then he's unaffected. But there still is etiquette. That's why etiquette's there. Right? It's still to be followed. Srila Prabhupada adds, one should be very careful not to commit offenses at the lotus feet of Vaishnavas, of whom Lord Shiva is the best. While instructing Lord Srila Rupa Goswami, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu described an offense at the lotus feet of a Vaishnava as Hatimata, a mad elephant. When a mad elephant enters a nice garden, it spoils the entire garden. Similarly, if one becomes like a mad elephant and commits offenses at the lotus feet of a Vaishnava, his entire spiritual career is halted. One should therefore be very careful not to commit offenses at the lotus feet of the Vaishnava. Mother Parvati was justified in punishing Chitraketu, for Chitraketu impudently criticized the Supreme Father, Mahadeva, who is the father of all living entities, conditioned within this material world. The goddess Durga is called Mother, and Lord Shiva is called Father. A pure Vaishnava should be very careful to engage in his specific duty without criticizing others. This is the safest position. Otherwise, if one tends to criticize others, he may commit the great offense of criticizing a Vaishnava. Okay, so one has to be very careful. Because we see in the beginning of Brahma Samhita that it's because of the connection of Shiva and Parvati, then therefore all living entities are appear, and they're all in that masculine and feminine nature. So they are the, father and mother of the universe. Right? So that way he is father, she is mother. Right? Yes. Yeah.
Sorry if I didn't come on time, or if it's still on at this point, but when Chitraketu becomes Ritasura, he remembers when he was.
I don't know. I don't think it matters, because he's just remembering the Lord and he has his duties. Because he's on a different body, what does it matter? You know, just like his Chitraketu, does he remember what is his who he was? You know, in a previous life. Okay. You know, so it doesn't really matter. Mm-hmm. You know, because this is different than Jarabharat, where he's showing going through the different births and then there. Because here,
as the king of the Vidyadharas, he still has the same consciousness as when he was the king.
Okay.
You know, so basically that principle is there.
Mm-hmm. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare
Hare. So, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jainita Gaurupinoda ki.